So I am going to introduce them from my far left to the closest. But you should know him. He's the SRC. Do you know him? He's the SRC president. Okay, good. So you're doing a good job. Welcome. But I'm going to start with Mr. Donald Mkhwanazi over there, who's a student activist, student leader.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you owning it? Leader,
yes,
activist?
Both.
Both.
Activism.
And in the middle, the rose amongst the thorns, Miss Angelique Mafadza, who's actually from Wits, but she couldn't stay away from being at UJ. So she's here as a voice of Wits, maybe?
Voice of Wits, I'm not too sure because I wasn't sent by them, so we can't use that. To say I'm a student leader from Wits University, I guess, or a postgraduate student in public development studies.
And absolutely last but not least, as leaders should be, leading from the back, Mr. Lehumo Dibakwane, who is the SRC president. Thank you for joining me. This is an exciting conversation for me because one of the things that I'm deeply, deeply passionate about is seeing if young people are even interested in politics. So I'm going to start with you, my lady, because these two have identified themselves as student activists. Does politics matter to you?
Of course it matters to me, especially as a young woman living in South Africa. I mean, I can't even cross the street without feeling unsafe. I can't walk next to someone of the opposite gender. Even women now, I'm afraid of them in the evening without feeling scared. And I feel that if our politics were in the correct place, or if our political state was one that allowed fertile social agency, then I wouldn't have that problem. The problem of basic need, the problem of safety.
So what drew you to politics that you put your hand up and said you want to be in the SRC?
Okay, so I think maybe contextually I've been active since grade 10 or grade 9, somewhere there. So I think what drew me most to politics was from where I'm from Bushbuck Ridge. So there's a lot of infrastructural problems as far as the provisioning of roads, even in schools. So through that, my passion for activism and was drawn there. But moreover, I grew to understand that whatever's happening as far as infrastructure, it's due to politics. It means that a councillor's not doing their job, the mayor's not doing their job, the MEC and so forth. So I wanted to become an active participant and not just be someone that keeps on speaking and complaining. Hence why maybe when I came to university, I joined politics to also contribute actively. So in
Donald, and for you? Are you an office bearer or are you just an agitator on the outside?
Both an office bearer and an agitator, I would say. Yeah, for me...
I don't think the guys can hear you over there.
Okay,
so you need to speak
just, okay. For me, I believe that politics is life.
Life?
Yes, politics is life. You can't separate politics from life because I believe that politics is the systems that make up life. For example, like how Lume is saying that you have councillors whatsoever, councillors must deliver basic services to the people so that people can live. So that is, whole process is politics. So for me to join politics was that you can never want change to happen, but you want part of the change. You must do something. So I just took it upon myself to say that, you know what, let me just raise my hand and just be involved, even if I'm not holding a position, but just being involved and being able to even conversate and, you know, articulate that a policy, one must happen, so ever. So for me, that is politics.
So inspired by the points that the gentleman just made, I would like to touch on something that makes politics stand out for me. I'm from Soweto, and if you know the history of Soweto, even the conception of it was one of a segregatory form. So I'm from a public school as well in there, and I know what it's like to lack things like sanitary towels and have my teachers chip in and contribute and give it to me, you know. But it happens that we don't have enough of these things, and period poverty is still a thing. Politics can come in place to save that. But then again, I'm also a beneficiary of the GCRA. It's a bursary fund that Premier Panyaza Lusifi began in the province for all the top 3 students in the public schools. And I can't take away from how effective that has been in my life. I currently have a degree. I'm doing my postgrad and I'm continuing with my studies. Someone who couldn't even afford a packet of pears has a degree from Wits University and is continuing with her studies. And now I even get to start programs that donate reusable pads to not only students in varsities, but we visit high schools as well to remember where we're from, those young children, they may not be able to vote, they may not be an integral part of the political processes and what's not, but politics affects them deeply. And it takes me remembering what it was like being in their position to be able to stand up and remember that they need us to stand up for them as well.
So I'm going to ask you, just a show of hands, who here is interested in politics? Just a show of hands. Interested in politics? Do you? You're not sure? You are interested. Okay. Do you vote? Yes. Yes, you vote. Do you think our politicians are doing enough? So you talked about Banyaza Lusufi, and we just saw a scandal with him and the issue of people not having water and him saying he showers at a hotel. Do you think our politicians are doing enough, or could they do better? Start with you.
I believe, I wouldn't use one paintbrush on it. There are people, like, for example, to say that Banyaza initiated the GSARE or the Gauteng government. It came to a point wherein, when we're speaking about the issue of funding in the higher education sector, to say that if we could have each and every province be as progressive as Gauteng, wherein you have a much more structured bursary fund, when you take people that are from your province, we could be able to absorb students that would get defunded by NSFAS or even the missing middle students. So just that there isn't political will in a lot of leaders, especially in those sort of like remote provinces such as Limpopo and Mpumalanga. So I feel like not much is done. It's just a very small fraction of politicians that are pulling their weight. And you know, when you are just a minority trying to implement progressive policies, and then there's 1,000 more that are just there maybe to loot money and so forth, your job gets overshadowed by the wrong things and so forth. So, yeah, basically that.
Yeah, for me, we can't say that politicians are not doing enough. There is something that we can't. Because I am where I am today because of NSFAS. And that is a decision that was taken by a politician somewhere else, a political decision. So we can't say I'm doing enough, but there's that, I don't know, there's something that must click in their minds. I think the human sense must come back. Because also we cannot be sitting whereby there's a community without no water and say politicians are really doing something. Today, they're not doing anything. There are students here who goes to bed hungry. Politicians aren't doing anything. So they must be pushed. Even themselves, they must come back to the human sense. So that, okay, fine, I'm a human, they're human. I must be able to think that this person must survive also. So I feel like the human sense must come back. That's what that must happen.
I like the fact that you say they must be pushed. By who?
By us. There's no one who pushes politicians other than us. We're the ones who voted them to power. We must push them. We must shout at them. We must call them out. That is why I hate politicians who don't want to be called out.
Who don't want to be called out. Do you want to say something and then I'll come to you?
I think that they could do better, especially seeing when the very little that they do affects us in a positive way. I just mentioned Premier Lusufi. The decision he took of GCRA being in place affected me in such a positive light that my life gets to change like this. But there's still so many other people who are not funded. And politicians could do something about that. There's still so many other people who are getting financially excluded, especially from the institution that I'm from. It's ridiculous. The numbers are insane. So SRCs have to go out to private companies to fundraise for an SRC fund in order to get the students to register. Whereas we have politicians who have been voted into place. And I'm certain that there are resources that could be put into this thing. And it's just that they're taking decisions that, I guess, seem to not care about such things. And while he just mentioned NSFAS, that's another example of the little that they do that affects us in a positive light. But they could do more, especially with the resources they have at their disposal. We have a premier who affected me in a positive light, but I'm not going to stand here and defend the fact that he said that he can go shower at a hotel when I have family at home that didn't shower for a good 4 days because there was no water. I can't defend that. They could do better. We could avoid having those leaks. We could fix our infrastructure that sends water to ensure that everyone has water. Water is literally a basic need.
You know, I'm a bit at odds with that. We have to push politicians. I mean, when I stand up to run for a councillor position or become an MEC and so forth, it's not like the people came and fetched me to say that, no, raise your hand up so you can be on the ballot and so forth. You stood up and said that you want to serve the people. So when you're in office, you must understand the kind of people that you're serving. You must understand the country that we're in. Number one, our country is haunted by immense inequality. So you understand that you're leading people that are haunted by inequality. Therefore, you should make sure that as far as stabilizing and ensuring that there's equity in all spheres. You are there. For example, we're using the CAPS curriculum. I'm a teacher, for example, by profession. The CAPS, we have a centralized curriculum, but the curriculum is being implemented in various schools with different resources. So you should be pragmatic and understand that, no, same curriculum, but this school is lacking compared to this other one, therefore you should close in the gap. But overall, like I was saying, can we not find ourselves at the center in we're pushing people to do their jobs? They get paid, they have benefits and all those other things. Can they just do their jobs then? We'll be fine. Fine, there's no perfect human being, but...
You are raising two points that are very fascinating, and I'm going to come back to, because they're two sides of the same thing. And I just want to check, are you voting? Have you voted on your poll, on the question? Have we got this QR code? Questions, comments, anybody in the wants to join the conversation from the floor? Anyone? Sort of. There's a microphone. Okay, I'll come back to you. So you are saying they should be pushed, and you're saying people are putting up their hands. We know, the statistic tells us that young people today are not showing up, not putting their hands up to stand for positions, not even showing up to vote and hold politicians accountable. What do you think it is that isn't appealing to young people that we could be changing to get more of them in the system, voting and putting their hands up to be the change? You want to say something?
Okay.
I'll start with you, ma'am.
All right. I think that it's the failure of the people who are already occupying these offices. For example, if you're voting for a national government, we already have one. And young people are looking at this and seeing the kind of work that's being done by the national government. And they're seeing it as ineffective in their lives. They're unemployed. Maybe someone finished their matric with a diploma. It's very unlikely that you'll get into a university or even get funding with that. You're sitting at home. There are no jobs. You barely have enough. There's no grant for young people. There's no grant for people who are 21, for example. Like, there is a grant for people who are 68. So they really are not receiving help from the government. So to them, it's like, what's the point? Because I'll just vote someone in and they'll just continue the system that benefits me in no way. So they don't see the role of their government in their lives. And that's why they don't see a need to vote for a government. So what we could do is, the people who are already in these positions, because it's not to say that since young people are not voting, there are no people in these positions. The people who are in these positions have to now reach out to young people, show young people that you care about them, and then you'll have young people care about you and the processes that get you where you are.
You know, I have a problem with young people who occupy space and not do anything. There's a lot of young people in leadership positions. Currently. I know it's controversial. No, let me save that for when I'm done making this point I want to make. You know, there are many young people occupying space right now. Let's be honest, guys. Let's be honest that this era is an era whereby majority, not even majority, let me not say majority, but the old guard is exiting the room. But we have young people who are not doing what they're supposed to do. They're not fighting enough. We have young ministers who know the struggle of being a student, who know the struggle of being a young person, unemployed, having nothing to eat, but they are not pushing what they're supposed to push. When they get there, they get lobbied to I don't know, they just sleep. I don't know, maybe there's something that they're using on these young people.
I'm going to push back on that one for you, because, and this is why I'm saying, like who? Because when you see the people in parliament, the average age is over 50. Average age. Who are these young people that you feel are not doing anything? Call them out. You said you want to call them out.
No, let's be... The ministers are young. Minister of Education is young.
Minister of Higher Education.
Is very young.
But Minister of Health is not.
Yes, that's why I'm saying that the old guard is exiting. But we do have young people who are occupying space. So many young people. For example, we have people like Professor Hassan, very young, from VETS. Went up the ranks up until parliament. We have Minister Park Tau. We have so many young people in parliament, but we feel like as young people, they're not pushing the agenda of young people, radically so.
What's the agenda of young people? There's a comment or a question here. You wanted to say something?
Okay, Sanbran, Njani.
Sure.
Zapilka Malamu, Prince Sibiya.
Prince
Sibiya. Okay.
Kulume hlala phezulu nathi sikuzwe.
Okay, let me stand up.
Yeah.
Yabo. So firstly I want to know ukuthi the VVIP party, the voters voice party, who is it funded by? Because I can see our resources. As young people, we need to know ukuthi if you are funded and we are going to support you, who are those elites that are behind you? You understand? We need to know that. Ogunya futhi, Mr. President, you touch on a very important fact. You understand? That, yeah, it was a good point that you made. I don't know if everyone...
What's the point? Yeah.
I was about to know him. I just forgot, man. It's about manja mehlabani. But we need to know who funds you. What's your goal? You understand?
Yeah.
Where are you going as we are coming? As we can see, we are going to see you. We want to know where are you going?
Yeah. Where
I don't know if it's the podcast party or it's the VIP that is here. What's your way forward? You understand?
Okay, so good day to all. My name is Kwakhanya Duma. I'm actually not into... Okay, I'm not doing politics. I'm a person of arts, theater, arts and performance, but I love politics. So I wanted to touch on... Is it... You said they need to be pushed. And you said you don't think so, right? Because they, we are not the one that called them in. So now... Since you say that, what should we do if politicians just sit down and see that education is compromised? We have schools with leaking toilets. We have schools with toilets that don't even work at all. I could give reference. Am I allowed?
Yeah.
We have a school called Eklund Boys High School that was put on the internet by DA, right? Because the toilets are leaking. There's no lighting in classrooms, there's no lighting in the corridors, everything is dark. So what should we do to politicians who don't do their job when they are supposed to do their job? Shouldn't we push them?
Okay, valid point. Do you want to respond to that and then I'll come to you?
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So what you should do to them, number one, you know every 5 years you get to vote, you get to use your vote and vote for the person you believe can best champion your interests. For example, there's no sustainability in, for example, there's maybe as an SRC president, I've been elected maybe from a certain party, and I come with my manifesto and say that, no, I'm going to ensure that allowances come in aid, I'm going to ensure that the library is efficient, and all these other things. You vote me in, and I don't do anything. You constantly have to message me. I don't even respond to your messages. I don't even communicate anything with you. Sometimes it's not about you doing the actual job or maybe solving it, but if we see you as a councillor, as a mayor or something, we're actively pushing for this thing, students or the masses will be satisfied in that, no, our mayor is actually doing something about it. Just that it won't be realized in a year or so forth, but we are, no, in the next 3 years or something, it's going to be realized, like the water issue. And then the next elections come, you vote for that very same party, maybe, for example, again, they do the very same thing. And then you do it again, vote for them, and what do you expect to happen? For example, the issue of funding in the higher institutions, we've been speaking about it for the longest time, but then there hasn't been really a pragmatic solution to it. Like, for example, like I was saying, that if other provinces could also implement the Gauteng GSRA model, would solve a lot of issues as far as the missing middle students are involved and so forth. So there's no use in you using your vote, voting for the same thing over and over again. I'll bet Einstein has a nice definition for that.
So you're saying if they don't do their work, vote them out?
You vote them out.
Okay.
I just wanted to speak to a point the first gentleman made and link it to a question you asked earlier about why do young people not vote? And I remember being so conflicted in the last national elections, thinking, oh my gosh, I have to vote, first of all, regional, provincial, and national. And when I read all these manifestos, I don't find one that truly speaks to me. I'm a woman in South Africa. I mentioned this earlier. It's very important that you prioritize attacking GBVF for me. And none of them did. And it goes again to speak to the leadership gap that we have. And what causes this leadership gap? Again, we have people who have ideas, people who may be very capable of leading. I believe that if you make me president, I could lead the country well. But he mentioned things like funding. there's no funding for such things. They only fund certain avenues, but also why. And again, speaking to the podcast party and what you guys do, what exactly are you about? And to his question, and also, how do we access the avenues that you access to find more expression? Because as much as it's a democracy and we're supposed to have expression and we're supposed to be voices that are heard, there's a limit to how much we can be heard. I can't just enter parliament and have an opinion and have all those leaders hear me. I can't just enter and remind them, hey guys, you live in a country where there's a lot of women who are being killed. Stand up and fight that. Mr. President, in 2019, you set a goal of fighting GBVF. How's that going? Update us on that. There's no platform for me to do so. So how exactly are you guys doing this? And how would you advise other people, more young people like myself, to do so? Because it's not that we're incapable. It's not that we don't want to. It's that there's no way for us to do it.
You don't see the way.
Yes.
Okay, you want to say something, sir? I'll come back to you.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo the same sentiments with my leader here. But with the, it's about getting young people into politics. It's very difficult to get young people into politics because I've engaged young people both in institution and outside institution and the community and all that. But people they simply don't want to vote. So they might see yes, Angboni e. My toilets are not working at Lone Boys. But they wouldn't take the initiative to go and vote unless if big parties that have big funding and all that fund them and say, like, if you vote, I'll give you a T-shirt, I'll give you a tender, whatever it is. And that's really how the politics of these days now works. So I really wanted to, like, engage with the leaders here and ask, is there, like, a way where we can, like, make voting more accessible for the young people, like digitally, or to make it more so like the young people can engage.
So
in
you
politics,
think that voting should be more accessible for young people,
yes.
More digital, because that's where young people are. I'll come back to you, but I want to ask this question, and anybody, any one of you or anybody on the floor can take the question. I mean, we talk a lot about the government creating opportunity, and you are all varsity students, and very soon you're going to be looking for a job, and we know the statistics that the work, especially amongst, I look around here, 40% of young black people are unemployed, right? Do you think the government needs to be doing more to ensure high-skill, high-value jobs for young graduates, for young people in South Africa, and what is that thing that they could be doing?
I believe that the government must now explore all avenues. What I mean by that is that it's time that you also tap into the TVET sector, for example. It's time now we also emphasize that students must not study for the sake of study, but must study meaningfully so, with a plan. Because we have so many students who are just studying. You know, they're studying a course that is already saturated. By the time you graduate, where are you going to be employed? So I think we must also make things easy, but just also being involved and just ensuring that what we study is what is relevant to the economy. And also tapping into the right skills, you know, tapping into STEM, especially those learners coming to university. I think doing that will actually make things easy for the government also. And also the private sector must also come to the party, because the government can't do this thing alone. Private sector must also come to the party and make jobs. That's what I just wanted to echo.
Okay. Private sector must come to the party. I will come to you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
To add on to his point, I think it's also a thing of being intentional. How does...
Being intentional,
at least on the government side. How does a grade 12 learner from Sekanondwane, that's the school I'm from, know what's needed and what's not needed? Because I'll go to Google and Google will tell me, if you study to be a doctor, you'll get a job. Yesterday or 2 days ago, there was a strike. Doctors literally took to the streets because they do not have jobs, which is weird. Because when you, I also use public health care. When I go to the clinic, I have to literally get there at 5 a.m. and I'll only get assisted if I'm lucky at 1:30 p.m. And they tell us that there's a shortage of doctors, there's a shortage of nurses. But we're seeing doctors take to the streets because they are not employed. How do we have that gap? Where is it being met? Because I'm pretty certain that those people did medicine, sure that they'll be covered. It's certain that they'll be fine. STEM, that M in STEM stands for medicine, by the way. But we still have doctors who are not employed. And again, it's about access to resources. I come from a school where UJ, okay, I'm not a UJ student, but I will give UJ a shout out for this. UJ is the only university that visited my public school to talk to Asymmetric about applying. No other university did. And when I got to VITS, I found people from schools like Penryn and other schools who are telling me, no, VITS came, UCT came, NWU came, all these institutions came. Why not come to us? Is it because I was born poor? So there's that gap in informing young people, but also a gap in supplying jobs in that sense. Someone who did medicine should not be without a job, especially when me as a normal citizen can see the gap. I know there's a shortage of doctors in the public sector. Why are doctors not hired?
And why do we have doctors with no jobs? Yes, sir.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. My name is Kamolo Chauke, a VITS education student. So I wanted to start by answering the gentleman from Bosa when it comes to the voter turnout of young people, right? I don't think South Africa, at the current state that it's in, can play with the idea of making voting digital and think that it's the only thing that can get young people to come out and vote. Because we saw in the 2024 elections, especially in voting districts that are close to universities, that there were lines from the morning until it closed. They even had to work after hours. So young people do show up for voting. Young people do show up for elections. And then the problem becomes, how do we hold the people that we voted into power accountable? So before we think about, which is the problem of South Africa, we'll think about smart cities, we'll think about 4IR and all of those things, whilst people are still living in the second industrial revolution without taps and waters where they come from. So let's not be fancy about it and just reintroduce the culture, which is something that is happening. And we know a lot of young people are joining political parties to do the same. We canvass for these parties, we wear their t-shirts and say that people must go and vote for them. And we, in our structures, also need to hold them accountable, right? So I'm a deputy chairperson of the EFF in Ward 60. We do hold accountable the people that we firstly endorse for power and who are in our organizations to say, this is something that you are not doing right and this is something that you are doing right. And then when it comes to the employment, right, the party I'm coming from has a strategy of saying, this is how we're going to make sure that there's employment for the youth and for people over the age of 35. Because we know in South Africa, after you finish with school, they babysit you, they give you 6 months in programs here and there, or they just blue tick you until you are 35. And when you get to that age, they tell you you can't have a job. So our manifesto, having been our land and jobs now, we're speaking about how we can actually make sure that there are jobs that the state can provide, even before we can speak about the private sector entering the conversation, right? Our president said, Cyril Ramaphosa said to us, the state is not responsible for creating jobs. And people continue to vote for that person who said, actually, the people who must be stressed about jobs is the private sector and not us. If you build state capacity, for example, if you say every state company must use insourced security guards and cleaners, you've already created a job for people who are low-skilled and semi-skilled. If you are going to say we are going to have our own construction company, we are going to have our own manufacturing plants where we are going to produce school shoes and uniform, we are going to do for our prisoners, everything that the state needs to tender. Comes from the state, the job idea is going to be, you know, dealt with, right? But one of the other agendas...
I'm going to cut you.
Sure.
Because you've now had 4 points. No.
Sharp.
4 points, so one, thank you. We understand.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. We're going to move.
Can we introduce drugs into this conversation?
We will.
As it goes forward. Thank you.
We might.
Sure.
But we've heard four of your points, so thank you for that. Before I come to you, I just, you know, just want to go back to the poll and thank you for your responses. I'm interested in the responses here. Are you hopeful about the future of South Africa? And 67% of the people who responded said no. And I'm interested to know why you're not hopeful. Does anybody want to say, do you want to tackle that? Okay, did you say no, you're not hopeful?
Actually, I am.
You are hopeful.
Yes.
Why are you hopeful?
Okay, so I think South Africa. Okay. Are we talking about South Africa or Africa in general?
Let's start with South Africa. Okay. And then we can talk about Africa.
So for me, I feel that South Africa has the potential to do better.
Yes.
Okay. Of course, we speak about young people. As much as young people nowadays worry or think about groove Friday after school, I want to go groove, you know. But I feel, because in schools, generally, we have a lot of South Africans that are doing good, right? We just need the government. Let's not look at the private sector. It's private. The government is for the people. It's the public sector. So the government should come in and assist those kids that do well in schools, right? Not to take them into parliament and put them under their own parties and elevate them, no. But teach them. We have a lot of workshops that the government creates for young people, right? They claim to train young people. But for me, I don't think that's enough.
That's not enough. Okay.
Yes.
Who said no? Who's not hopeful? I'd like to hear somebody who said they are not hopeful about the country and why they are not hopeful. Don't want to own it. What about you? If you were to say, are you hopeful about the future of South Africa or not hopeful about the future of South Africa?
I think we are with South Africa, like the brother said, there's potential and we must appreciate that. It has been proven that the only problem in South Africa is corruption.
The only problem is corruption.
Corruption, yes. Without corruption, everything will be fine.
I'll come to you.
And I feel like once without corruption, everything will come back to normality. Because it seems like the past few years, a lot of things are happening. And currently, South Africa is going on the path of rooting out corruption. You can see that the economy is going steadily. So there's light at the end of the tunnel.
I think the main problem is corruption, but only is a very strong word to use, because we have many other problems like an inability to see a need. I will always come back to this. South Africa has a lot of young girls who are skipping school because they do not have pads. It's not even been an agenda in parliament that they discuss. And again, bringing it back to private sector, the private sector benefits heavily from the citizens of South Africa. So it's only fair that it pours back. I'll make an example that I made in one of my classes. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm a public and development management student. If we could have a government that cared about such and could twist the private sector's hand to say, no, as a government, we failed to address period poverty. How about you always, as a company that benefits from South Africa, heavily so. In fact, your products are even taxed when they shouldn't be. How about you're responsible for public schools in Gauteng? You, Cotex, you also benefit from us. You're responsible for public schools in Northwest. You, Lilet, you also benefit from us. You're responsible for private schools, for public schools in Limpopo. Having them care about such things. Because even if we uproot corruption and have the resources, how do we know that they'll be poured into the streams that actually benefit South Africans? How do we know that the needs of South Africans will be met? They think that the biggest problem we have is unemployment. My biggest problem is the need to survive because there's GBVF. So it's also about what the government deems important versus what the citizens actually need.
So, three people, you said private sector is private, public sector must care about the people. Mr. EFF also raised the issue of private and public, and you are raising the issue of private companies must be more involved, which gets me thinking. We see companies shutting down in South Africa. We see a lot of companies in 2024, I think the number was something like 200 companies that shut down and left the country. Do you think that there is a risk of more private sector companies leaving the country because our politicians are corrupt or they don't feel the benefits? We have too many unemployed people. Do you think private companies are leaving this country because the government is not doing enough? I'll start with you.
You know, I feel like just like any other business, I think also as an individual, you can't keep on living in a place like Brixton, where there's high crime, you are not guaranteed electricity or any sort of energy. You'd have no choice but to leave because you end up spending so much on putting contingency plans like generators and so forth. Therefore, it gets to a point where you're no longer making any profit. But moreover, I feel like as a progressive government, in those that are leaving, for example, if we have what A and B companies that are leaving, the government should fill in the gap. Start, like how you are saying, like create that industry, whatever company has left, create our own alternative. That's how China is where it is today. We can't have a situation wherein we're still importing a tablespoon and so forth. Like if that tablespoon, we're no longer importing them, can we create them ourselves? It goes back to what Donald was saying, that can we make the TVET sector great again? Because that's where most of the skills revolution is most likely to occur, unlike in institutions of higher learning like universities. So I believe the government, as I said, as it is right now, it doesn't guarantee these companies energy, water, and so forth. They're bound to leave, but they should step in wherein there is that void and ensure that they nationalize it to a certain point so that we can progress as a country then.
Can they do it, though? If they can't give us water, can they run companies? There was a comment. Yes, sir.
Sure. Thank you very much. Can you guys hear me? Sure. So I think you guys have touched on very important points. I do, however, think there's one important one that if we ignore, then we're just talking shop, right? And it's simply that the crisis in South Africa and facing all black people across the world is created, it's man-made, it's intelligently designed in a manner of speaking. And obviously through the violent procurement of territories, right? Currently, the USA just pretty much took over Venezuela. They want to take over Iran. China will probably at some point invade Taiwan, right? And we obviously live as the people who've been conquered, as the other countries that we are seeing being currently conquered, which is simply to say that we don't own our resources, man. We can create as many jobs as we want. However, if we cannot even own the houses that we're living in, they are simply owned by the banks. We're simply moving from slavery to being indentured laborers, right? It's just creating a very small minority of a middle class that is also suffering. So I think any political conversation that is serious, especially if we're talking about liberation, not necessarily just voting, we should speak about the question of land. And I know that that idea has been sort of like decampaigned by the media as something that is impossible. However, unfortunately, it's the only thing I think that's going to bring us the change that we are looking for. If you look at the Congo, they are facing a man-made crisis as well. They can vote as much as they want. However, the only solution for the Congo is that they must own their country. In the same way that the only solution for South Africa is that we must own our country. Obviously, in the process of doing that, we must ensure that
a clarity
we deal
question.
With the ANC. Yes?
May I ask you a clarity question? So you feel that we're having a political conversation missing a critical component, and that is the question of land. So my question to you, do you feel that South Africans today have no ownership or agency over how the country is run or managed?
Are you talking in terms of voting or in terms of systematically?
You decide which one you want to answer.
Okay,
sure. Or you can answer both if you think you can.
Okay, so okay. It's very clear, man. If you look at it systematically, I think about still about 80% of the land is in the hands of the minority. So that tells you everything you need to know if you are not owning the ground that you are standing on. In as far as voting is concerned, it doesn't mean we have power. I think it means we are participating in power, right? And so in that participation, I would say that as we are waiting for the land, we should be responsible. And the only way, obviously, to be responsible is to vote out the incompetent, corrupt, and evil ANC.
Okay, thank you for that. There was and it's agitated some people. I want to come back to the issue of drugs that you raised. And if you were to, and anybody can answer this, If you were to put on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think are the three biggest challenges facing young South Africans today? I'll start with you three. I'll start here and go that way. What are the three biggest challenges, 1, 2, 3, facing young South Africans today? And then I'll ask the floor, and what can we do about it?
I think the most important one, I think it's opportunities. I think opportunities is multifolded. It goes to employment, it goes to access to institutions of higher learning, it goes to opportunities to go into business as a young person. So I think, but the most important one would be the issue of unemployment. Because for example, I'll make a simple example. So I was doing my teaching practicals to show how much immense unemployment is. So there's a student, you know how you'd have students that are saying.
So you see the music starting
yes.
up. Okay, I'm giving you 30 seconds okay. to make your point and then I'm meeting.
Okay, fine. A clear example, we'd have learners right now, they would be selling seats and so forth. And then we'll be applauding them, saying that, no, they are being a future entrepreneur and so forth. But when you ask them, why are you selling? It's not just because they want to install themselves as future business people. It's because mama, papa is not working. Therefore, I need to get the way in order for me to survive in school. And what that does is that it takes away the attention. It takes away the attention in class. So that goes to show how much unemployment is an issue now.
So unemployment. 30 seconds. Oh, no, you've said yours is GBV. So I'm going to jump here and I'm going to say you.
Okay, mine is mental health.
Mental health.
Mental health. That's the biggest thing that is facing young people today, because people don't know what will happen tomorrow. And in the midst of that, then someone will then go and drown in drugs and alcohol. So for me, mental health is the biggest problem facing young people today.
What should the government be doing about it?
The government, I think they should start opportunities. Once you provide opportunities, even if it's a skills development program, I think it's something. Rather than just sitting, watching the sun rise and sunset. Opportunities, that's all.
On the floor? Yours is drugs, I know. So I'm not going to have you. Sir?
It's accountability. Because, you know, young people are having this issue of having problems that are systematically created. But there's no one to account for them. You go to whatsoever department, you get there, they will tell you that it's not our problem. So-and-so has to deal with this. You go there, they tell you to go back there. So mostly that we are suffering from is accountability from our government and other stakeholders within our country.
Okay. Accountability is yours. I've heard you twice, ma'am. What's your top problem? If you were to say, top problem facing young people in South Africa today, what would it be?
Say the top problem that's faced by young people. I don't say this because it's mostly women, but because men are also involved in this. They are also victims as much as they are also perpetrators, which is gender-based violence. We have young men that have been victims of gender-based violence, but they don't know it. Rape, for example, they don't know it. They think it wasn't GBV because they got to experience their first sex experience. And I'd say definitely gender-based violence is one of the biggest issues we are faced with in South Africa.
For you?
I'll say...
Microphone.
Oh. I would honestly say access into, like, opportunities.
Schools, access to opportunities.
Jobs. The youth unemployment is very high now, you see. So I would say access into certain things.
Ma'am, you haven't said anything. Your top one. I'll come to you, sir.
I'll say literacy.
Literacy
is my top youth issue. I feel like most people don't listen to understand. They don't respond out of understanding. And I feel as though it starts in high school as well. The conversation about the boy child being left behind. Also, I feel like children nowadays can't read for meaning. You understand? Yes, they can read, but they don't read and understand what it is they're reading. And I feel as though maybe it's time for an update in our curriculum, specifically in life orientation. I feel like that is one subject that people look down on, whereas that is where young children can actually be taught real life stuff, you know. We understand peer pressure is a thing, but they also need to understand the real dangers of substance abuse. Not just what you normally find on the streets, like crack and stuff like that, but more like psychedelics as well, because what I've noticed is that there's a huge rise in psychedelics. People are just like, no, there's nothing wrong with psychedelics. It's just cannabis but elevated or something of the sort. But that is another thing that needs to be addressed. Alcohol is another thing that people downplay. Addiction to alcohol is one, especially in our country, that is one thing that we
Thank you. So you're gonna have the last word.
I think job opportunities has to go with government authority and civil compliance. No matter how you are bored and civil compliant. No matter how you are bored, don't be part of criminal activity or do illegal things. You have to know, if you do illegal thing, you have to face the most brutal consequences. We have been in that situation where we sit from the sunrise to the sunset, but we never been part of criminal activity and illegal things. So government has to have government authority and civil compliance. You have to fear our government first so we can mitigate corruption and all those things. If we fear government, we cannot steal anything. You cannot be part of something, you know, government can do a wrong thing to you.
Okay, we got that. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.